Hello, everybody. Stu Smith here again with another Tactical Fitness Report. And today we have a special guest, Nate Palin, former Army Ranger, and now a tactical fitness professional that has gotten involved with a new organization called FitOps.org. And we're going to talk about that mission extensively throughout this. But Nate, thanks for joining us today on the Tactical Fitness Report.
Oh, thank you for having me, Stu. I appreciate it.
So I, you know, as I mentioned in the intro there, you are a former Ranger, but I didn't really give a whole lot of, you know, meat to that story. So fill us in a little bit on, you know, your journey, you know, into the military, what you did in the military, and your transition out of the military too, you know, into the fitness world. How did that go for you?
Yeah, I'll do my best for giving a brief version. Anytime I give the kind of the recap, I feel like I A, talk for too long, and B, still never cover a billionth of it. And so what I think I'll do is try to give you truly an abridged version. And then, you know, if you got some good follow-ups, that might be a good way to go. But
sounds great.
You know, the short version is I was in high school, set to go to college. And, you know, mom came home one day, asked why I wasn't doing my homework, said I didn't feel like it. She said, if you don't do your homework, you're not going to college. And I said, I'm not going to college. I'm going to be an Army Ranger. And the moment those words escaped my lips, it was kind of too late to go back. And I stuck by it. And that was the journey I decided to take. At the time, I had read Black Hawk Down, was published fairly close to that time. I think probably, you know, somewhere in the late 90s. And then also Saving Private Ryan that I went and saw in the theaters three times. And I did read a few SEAL books as well, but swimming's not my favorite activity, although I am comfortable in the water. So I decided I'm not going to go that route. And, you know, since then, the more I've read about wet sand, the happier I am that I chose to go Rangers. So,
hey, nothing wrong with that. I feel the same way when I put on a ruck. You know, it's just not my comfort zone, even though I can do it. And it's just something I'd rather be in the water than.
I was going to say anytime, you know, we work with SEALs, I feel like we carry the heavier stuff, but I guess that's just, we were far cry from water too. So fair enough.
That is true. That is true.
So, went in, you know, spent 4 years in the Rangers, and that was pre 9/11 when I joined. And then, you know, literally I was waiting to go to Ranger school when 9/11 happens. And obviously that changed everything with regard to the way we operated and the pulse of the unit. And went to Ranger school, which is really tough because I was deathly afraid that my unit was going to deploy without me while I was there. Fortunately enough, I graduated in December, and I think we headed to Afghanistan in February. Ooh. And so did a couple of trips. You know, quite frankly, they were a little on the boring side. I don't think we had really figured out what we were doing over there yet, or at least the mission hadn't trickled down to our level. So a couple of what I would call boring trips, decided to get out for a girl, terrible decision, and go to college. So I went to Butler University for 3 years, studied in marketing, did a couple of internships, one for the Indiana Pacers in sports marketing, one for a corporate real estate company, and really quickly realized that like neither one of those were worlds I cared to step into. Was really missing the fight, really missing the community. At some point that gal and I split, and that really opened the door for me to go back. In fact, I had two good friends who got out when I did, and they both went back. They had done another deployment, and they, you know, hey, Nate, this is way, way different than it ever was. Like, you need to come back, and you need to, like, come do what you had signed up to do originally. So next thing I know, I'm not just back. I'm back at 275 in the same company. My new platoon sergeant is a former squad leader from my previous platoon. So really like the same, literally just fell in on the same family.
Nice.
But even in that 3 years, it's amazing how much things changed. I actually had to go back through the Ranger assessment selection, or what had previously been RIP. So it was kind of funny because here I am with a combat scroll and a CIB and a Ranger tab, and I'm an E5. I got to keep my rank, and I'm back in RIP. And I remember there's a like these uprights with a big scroll outside of the main door, and you can't go through there until you graduate RASP. And so I used to go up and lean my right shoulder into the scroll because I had one on that shoulder, but I wasn't allowed to wear one on the other. It was a little silly, but I think basically the cadre loved it because I took a lot of stress off of them and really just was able to kind of lead the class. And also I was a little bit of a mole because, quite frankly, I was there the day to day on the inside, and I could see who really didn't deserve to belong. And I could let the cadre know, like, hey, you might want to look into, you know, Eli over there, because I think he's about to break, and I think he probably should. Now, same token, a couple of the cadre were folks who, when I was in previously, I outranked them, and luckily I didn't treat them too poorly because they definitely were in a position to turn the tables, and it could have got pretty ugly. But
that's such a neat story, though, because you know, we had a few SEALs that I remember when we were going through post buds training. You know, you had to go through, now they call it SQT. Mm-hmm. Back in my day, we called it STT, SEAL Tactical Training. And it was just that 6 months before you earned your Trident type of training that was just advanced buds, basically. And all these active duty SEALs were going through it as well, which was great. I mean, it wasn't a selection course. It was more like mm-hmm. a gentleman's course of learning the job. But yeah, having that extra, you know, firepower there with you, you know, and just, you could just see it in action on how to do it. It was like, sometimes you just got to see it to believe it. And, you know, having someone like you there with everybody is very powerful. A lot of people don't realize that, how powerful that is, I think.
Yeah, I really would agree. You know, it kind of lets you know what's possible. And it's, you know, it's one thing when it's the cadre, for example, demonstrating something, but you look at them and they kind of seem like they're in a class of their own. But then when it's somebody who's a little bit more tangible and approachable, I would agree that that makes a massive difference. You know, it's almost like the 4 minute mile, right? It's like, once you've seen someone else who's somewhat in your wheelhouse, be able to perform a feat like that. I mean, maybe not for us, but maybe we'll call it a 5 minute mile for us, but, you know, suddenly it seems like something that's accessible and achievable by you. So I would wholeheartedly agree. And I kind of enjoyed it as even for me, just as a way to step back into a leadership role and, you know, leading a platoon through a selection process is a far cry from just leading a fire team. And so really I would say it extended, you know, my capabilities on the leadership front. So really,
absolutely.
As much as I was not happy to have to go back through it, I think I'm better for it. So
nice.
You know, did basically then that led into another 3 years in Rangers, another few, you know, maybe three more deployments. And it was an amazing, amazing time. Same token, I was kind of at that point of, should I stay or should I go? And I didn't know what I wanted to do yet, but I knew I wanted to go a family route. And I knew that, you know, the Ranger family lifestyle is a very difficult one. Props to the people who can pull that off.
True.
I didn't feel that it really aligned with the way that I was comfortable living. So I made the decision to go ahead and get out. Same thing though. I didn't know what the heck I was going to do with my life. I'm 1 year from a degree in something that I could care less about. And right around the time I was getting out, Athletes Performance at the time and Jim Jones both came and did 1 week seminars at Second Ranger Battalion. And so that kind of exposed me to this idea of professionalism of fitness. And so I went to just a personal training school, National Personal Trainer Institute, and, you know, logged a whole bunch of hours. It was actually great because we got a lot of floor time. Fortunately for me, the person who led at our location was a former collegiate strength coach. And so, you know, it was a little less fitnessy, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I really liked the way it was structured. So went through that program. And then, you know, funny enough, I went to get a job at Gold's Fitness or Gold's Gym. And I go down to Gold's and I'm chatting with kind of the head manager there, I guess he was. And we're talking through stuff and I just get a weird feeling already being in that type of spot, because it just didn't quite jive with, like, you know, our makeshift gyms that we were creating overseas, or even at the time that nasty Ranger Bat Gym, which obviously those have been upgraded significantly.
True. They're beautiful now.
Yes.
Incredible. Yeah. It's almost too clean. I feel weird if I'm in a gym that's too clean.
Yeah. It's just not our vibe. Right. Yeah. So, I was still going to take the job. And then he says to me, hey, can you sign this non-compete? And I was like, actually I'm starting my own business on the side, cause I want to train some people and kind of grow that. And I thought he was going to kind of be pissed off about it. And instead he's like, oh, that's awesome. I've got a friend who rents out gym space to trainers like yourself who are starting their own business. Let me drive you over there right now and meet him. And so he did. And next thing I know, I'm running my own business in a shared facility on lakefront in Seattle. And that was sort of my first big step into this world. What I should say is, I started coaching just as a way to make some money while I figured out what I was actually going to do, like what my adult job was going to be. And then somewhere along that path, I realized that, oh, wow, you can actually be a professional coach. And as soon as I realized that, my goal was to bring that coaching back to special operations. Because when I got out in 2010, we did not have that yet. It was coming. It was on the horizon, although we didn't know it at the time. And what I just kept thinking was, boy, we went 1,000 miles an hour, putting our head through a wall day in and day out. And I started realizing like, wow, I'm not very strong. How am I not strong when I've been a ranger for 7+ years? And then just kind of realizing the way we train compared to ideal. And just like you said, we needed to be good at so many different things. And it's almost like we were good enough in spite of the way we trained, as opposed to because of the way we trained. And so I really wanted to bring that smarter way to train back to it. Because if you could combine, obviously, as you know, training smart and training hard, like that is a deadly, deadly combination. And so that kind of started the journey. A couple of years later, I was working with Department of Defense, really through a whole bunch of happenstance and quite frankly, getting jobs that I didn't deserve to get, but I got lucky and sort of bounced back, reopened my own business until a position opened up with First Special Forces Group. And then I coached there for 3 or so years. And once that didn't end, kind of a similar situation, I was not ever thinking about leaving that position. We had just bought a house in Seattle. I was renovating. I went to grad school online so that I could try to get caught up to my peers. Cause I had a marketing degree and everybody else has multiple degrees in exercise sciences. So I went back to school for exercise science. And, after those 3 years, I get a random call from a couple of people saying, hey, the position's opening up at NSCA Tactical. What are your thoughts? And I said, my thoughts are, I'm not interested. But after I had enough of those conversations, I started realizing maybe I could be the person for this job. I didn't really know what the heck the job was all about. So finally talked to Tyler Christensen. And in talking to him, I started to realize, wow, my random like entrepreneurship, coaching, tactical professional, marketing degree, all these things that seem to have been fighting each other to this point, suddenly really, really mesh and make sense.
Nice.
So I put them all together and combined them and took the job at NSCA, moved to Colorado Springs. And that was in early 2018. So only 3 years ago. In fact, about 3 years, almost 3 years in 1 month. In 1 month, it'll have been 3 years. So that brought me to the Springs, brought me to what I still consider the hub, although I know there's a lot more spokes out there, but I still think it's the hub of the Tactical Performance Network.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I've been involved with NSCA and tactical fitness before they even had the tactical strength and conditioning part. I think is around 2004, 2005-ish, I've been involved with them. And then all of a sudden, Mark Christensen creates this Tactical Strength and Conditioning Association. And that's where I first, or not the association, but Tactical Strength and Conditioning, he started doing these seminars and conferences. And that was the first time I'd heard of the term tactical fitness. And I'm pretty sure to this day, NSCA was like you said, the hub of that, they're pretty much the creator of the, at least the term tactical fitness. And then what that was enabled everybody to do in the world of tactical fitness, or I should say in the world of athletics, is to say, oh, there's something over here that's growing and there's a lot of money getting thrown at it from DOD and other organizations that are worried about their, you know, high stress jobs and just, you know, constant injuries and all this stuff. And then it started making sense where people were now putting a lot of money into studying these tactical athletes, you know, which is huge, because everything that we've had before 2005 were studies on athletes, collegiate athletes, professional athletes, you know, Olympic athletes. Very few studies were out there on the tactical athlete. And that has made a huge difference in how you and I both approach, you know, athletes that want to go into these professions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we used to beg, borrow, steal from collegiate and pro sport, right? And now we're starting to generate a lot of that information internally. And quite frankly, I had this conversation with Ryan Carroll yesterday. The human performance teams and programs within tactical are becoming the standard by which pro sport is starting to try to strive for, right? And so, you know, look at what they're doing down with the human performance wing with the Air Force and that facility and the program and coaching that they have going on there with the what used to be Battlefield Airmen Group. So there's phenomenal things happening. And I think the reason is the community, right? And that's where I think the NSCA has excelled, is just creating a platform for this community to continue to collaborate. You know, the information for tactical is not generated within the NSCA facility. What they do is just facilitate the connection of all the information from all these different places. And so in tactical, I just think that you have less silos, you have more willingness to collaborate, and you just have a relentless passion to support the soldier or, you know, first responder, law enforcement officer that you do not have in athletic setting. And I don't think you ever will, because it's just not, training someone for sport is never going to have that higher calling that training someone for life and death scenarios does.
Yeah, it seems to have a little more proprietary information when you're training high level athletes. Like, it's super secret stuff that is not shared. Whereas, you know, I can't tell you how many videos I can go to online and just see this tactical professional doing a creative exercise with someone with less equipment, doing much more movement and working movement patterns and just learning, you know, all over the place. So the education is out there. You just have to keep your eyes open. So that's, I love this, you know, community, like you said, and it is really kind of, you know, for someone like you and me, it's a way to still have your foot in the door to the communities that you love and you grew up with.
Absolutely. I was speaking at an Exos Performance Summit recently, and something I mentioned was that for me, a vital moment in my kind of coaching career was when I realized that it was never going to be the same as being an operator. And so you have to just kind of let that go and accept the fact that just still having your foot in the door in any kind of way to support those folks is a gift in itself, and to be extremely, extremely, you know, thankful for that and just stay humble daily and just kind of let go of the soldiering. And I think that was a vital moment in my transition, was just to say, hey, stop trying to match it, because you won't. Instead, make the most of the opportunity that's here in front of you to still be involved in that community.
Oh, and absolutely. You got to treat it like it's an honor to do it.
100%. 100%. And, you know, I know we're going to chat FitOps a little bit, and so I'll kind of hold off on expanding on that.
Well, you know what? I'm about to go into it, but first, you know, how was the, you know, we've obviously talked about your transition into fitness. Now you're with the NSCA, part of the Tactical Strength and Conditioning Program as the program director, which is a huge job, you know, and you just happened to hit it there at the end of the beginning of this pandemic that kind of probably messed up some things. But how was the transition out of that into FitOps, and how did that happen?
Yeah, so I'd been with the NSCA about 2.5 years and absolutely love the job. I mean, I got to travel the world. I get to present. I get to interact with folks that are just doing incredible things at such a high level. You know, I lived in my coaching bubble at First Group. And as soon as I stepped to the NSCA and I realized like what is out there from a research perspective, from a coaching perspective, and just the level at which the field is operating, it really, really was enlightening. And it was absurdly humbling because I'm a pretty good coach and I'm here at First Group. That's a great place to coach. And then you start realizing what else is out there and what's going on. And my thought was, I need to connect these things. Like I need to make sure that First Group knows what's going on at some other location so that they can all continue to help each other and kind of up their game. And so that was sort of the goal, you know, of NSCA Tactical, I guess, was to figure out a way to even elevate further the ability of that community to be really cohesive and collaborative. So was absolutely loving my time there. I will say, yes, I went to the International Association of Chiefs of Police Officer Wellness Symposium in Miami, Florida last, I want to say late February or early March. And it was the last trip that I took. And so we came back from that and maybe a week later, day after St. Patty's, I believe it was, you know, basically told, hey, pack your stuff. You're going to work from home for a couple of weeks. Well, that couple of weeks is still going and we're here past a year, right? And so that was a game changer for the job because now I wasn't able to travel, which was a huge part of why I love the job. So still got to collaborate and work with people, you know, every day all over the world. And that was absolutely fantastic. But and I certainly was not looking for any other opportunities because I was still waiting for one, the pandemic to end. So I could get back out there. And two, I still absolutely loved what I was doing. And I get a text on a Tuesday night, and it was kind of a lengthy one, multi-paragraph, somewhat rambling text, and, you know, from someone at FitOps. And my immediate thought was, because I had just been complaining to somebody about it, was, oh my God, another vendor, right, is trying to sell me something and trying to get NSCA Tactical on it. And, oh, it's some education thing because every vendor slaps education on what they do as a way to try to get it inside the NSCA doors. You know, so much so that we were creating like almost a protocol for objectively evaluating some of these vendors. So anyway, that said, I was a little bit annoyed by it. Well, a few minutes later, I get a text from my boss, which is not too normal for him to text me in the evening. It's pretty normal for me to bother him though. And he says, hey, I just sent this guy your way. You know, he's the head of this organization that I think would really resonate with you. And there might be something that they can do, you know, with Tactical. And so I was like, oh, I guess he was, you know, directed to me. So I shoot him a text back and, you know, it just so happens it was Matt Hesse, who's the CEO and founder of FitOps. And we get on a Zoom call a couple of days later, scheduled for maybe 30 minutes. I believe we went at least 90, just absolutely hit it off, had a phenomenal conversation. And quite frankly, partly probably because I didn't know there was potential for a job to be had, but I was brutally honest with him. So in other words, I loved everything about the FitOps cause, but I thought in the execution part of it that there were definitely some shortcomings, and he knew it too. And that's part of why he was reaching out, was to try to figure out and shore up some of those shortcomings, because he's somebody who has led multiple businesses over the years and had a lot of other things going on. And FitOps was sort of a side project passion for him. And what he did was stepped away from all those other things and jumped into FitOps, both feet all in, you know, full belly flop. So, you know, since he did that, he decided, hey, let's upgrade this thing and make it what it can be. So that call led to my mind just starting to go, because I'm hearing this FitOps journey for folks, and it sounds a lot like the beginnings of mine.
Same here.
It's like, man, you've got veterans that you're trying to figure out how to transition and provide them renewed purpose as personal trainers. And I'm like, that's kind of how I found my renewed purpose. And then that grew into actually coaching as a professional in tactical. And that's led me on this incredible, incredible journey. And so it just really, really resonated with me. And quite frankly, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was staying up late, hit my dry erase board. Matt loves to tease me about my dry erase boards, and just brainstorming stuff and sending him photos of just like mind mapping and ridiculous things at 11 PM on a Friday, poor guy. So, needless to say, he got in my head a little bit, in the best way possible. And next thing I know, I'm interviewing for FitOps and a very, very fast, transition from NSCA and into the FitOps shoes. So here I am.
Nice. So FitOps.org. Now it popped up on my radar when I saw some press releases when John Cena got involved with FitOps and made a donation of $1 million to your organization, because he saw the need, and he has always been very generous and very helpful towards veterans, and it is a great transition tool for veterans getting out and being able to actually earn a living really quickly doing something that is fun, challenging, and good for them.
Absolutely. And it's another way for them to continue to serve, right? I think a lot of us are kind of servant minded, and that's a reason that we join. And then when we get out and we're looking for that next thing, I think initially we kind of think financially, and then we sort of quickly realize that maybe there's not enough passion there to pursue what is only financially appealing, and it doesn't necessarily play to our skill set. And so I think that service-mindedness of coaching is very much a natural quality that exists in a lot of folks who served in the military.
And think about it too, as a regular business model. I mean, the activities that you learn from being in the military, and some of them are tangible and intangible, like discipline. But some of the tangible ones is, as a tactical athlete, we learn to get good at everything. At least now we do, now that there's a tactical fitness human performance program on it. So there's strength and power, speed and agility, muscle stamina, endurance, and multiple different avenues. You got swim, run, rucking. Mobility, flexibility, grip strength, all these things come into play, and that you've had some experience with developing. And then taking that into a civilian setting, and whether that's in a think of some of the popular things that civilians like to do. They like to do obstacle course races, which are right out of the military. They like to do boot camp workouts. I mean, those have been out for decades, kind of a military style, workout program. Yep. And then, go ruck, is another great one, just put a ruck on your back and team development and, pushing your perceived limits. Those are all very appealing to the civilian populace that likes, challenges and goals to strive for. And it makes a lot of sense for these former military people to go into those niche things. Is that something that FitOps is doing, not only with that kind of a market, but also just the general fitness market as well?
Absolutely. So, to your point, I think there's a little bit of a misnomer out there currently, because I think people think like, oh, I'm going to hire this right military trainer and he's just going to kick my butt. Mm. But to your point, really like you said, what's vital is that jack of all trades, master of none approach. And I think what we'll see is an even better candidate to coach in the future as these human performance programs start to influence the military culture further. Because as we both know, you know, they're not there yet. They're in a great place in the special operations setting, but the forces at large are lagging. Obviously with the ACFT, you know, things like that definitely are starting to help move the needle the right direction. But at the end of the day, it's really those general fitness qualities across the board that are so, so vital. And you nailed it when you said the, you know, some of the things are intangible like discipline. And so a big part of the FitOps program is not just taking the X's and O's of strength and conditioning, but it's also figuring out all of those other intangibles that they developed when they had the uniform on, and try to get these veterans to realize that you still possess those, even though you've taken off the uniform, and try to disassociate those identities a little bit so that they can start to lend those same intangibles toward a new profession.
Oh yeah. And like you said, that will help with the transition problems that we all had.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it doesn't matter what pathway you have set for you. It could be the perfectly paved, smooth path ever devised, but there's going to be bumps, whether that's just environmental, personality differences, you know, language differences. You know, people don't understand, you know, you may not understand fully the language or concepts, and humor, that's another one. You know,
that's a big one.
sometimes people in the military have a different type of humor than civilians, and it can be people look at you strange, like, was that a joke? but you know, so there's some differences in cultures, obviously, that are just challenging. And it can be a lot of people, if they're not, you know, moving in a right direction, can, you know, those things can really add to the problems. So it sounds like FitOps set you on a direct course to being able to do this. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So all the things you just mentioned, some people reconcile those better than others, right? And one thing I've noticed, and certainly due to my own personal journey, but some of us recognize them really, or reconcile them very well publicly. Like, I very seamlessly integrated into the civilian world, seemingly on the surface.
Oh,
but yeah. Then privately, right, my struggles were extreme, and I didn't have tools to address them, nor did I even have the willingness to go out and seek those tools or accept that I needed those tools, especially when I'm successful publicly, right? And so if my professional public life is successful and my private life is struggling, I basically just validate it to myself by saying, well, I'm a professional, I'm good, all things look fine, even though, you know, beneath the surface might be a different story. And so a huge component of FitOps is the fact that we address mental and emotional health and have, you know, actual professionals in that space who are creating, I don't want to say curriculum because that's such a dry term, but creating an experience where veterans are able to prioritize, understand, appreciate, accept, and access self-care. And that is something that is not just vital for, I think, the veteran community in that transitional process, but also in the coaching community. And so that is certainly something that is shared, because both of those communities, you're giving a lot of time, effort, energy out, and you're not always getting a whole lot reciprocated. And certainly when I started coaching, you know, personal training business, and how, like, the amount of time that I was putting into it and coaching, and just so much out, and I was never doing the things I needed to take care of myself. And you see that a lot with veterans, right? And then what happens when they're suddenly in a position where they can't be distracted by professional? You know, how many times have we seen someone of 25 years in service, and, you know, wake up on a Sunday and they're not in charge of a unit anymore, and they don't know what to do with themselves. And a lot of times that can lead to some pretty awful outcomes. And so instead, it's very important to get them to start to appreciate the idea of self-care, and not in like a fluffy way, but in an actual actionable context. And that's a big part of the FitOps on-camp experience. And then post-camp, we have a program called Aftercare that is directed by a gentleman named Johnny Martin, who, Stu, you'll understand this. You know how you meet some people who are not veterans and yet just seamlessly walk into our space as if they're home and they've just been there their whole lives, and we're super comfortable with them somehow. He's just got that kind of knack where he just instantly builds rapport with the veteran community, and you know, his selflessness shines through, and he's an absolute professional among professionals. The same token, gets our humor.
Nice.
And so, yeah, so Johnny leads our aftercare program. And so the idea being like, it's not, you didn't finish camp, get a certification, pat you on the butt, good luck. Instead, that's really just the launching point. That is, welcome to our community. We're here for you forever. And not only do we want to support you, but we expect you to start investing and support us as well to truly make it, you know, a continuum.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
I tell you what, that's really invaluable, because I can tell you, and maybe this would be a kind of a cool segment to kind of play around with, is, you know, some of the lessons learned that you and I had, you know, when we first got started. But plus, I mean, I'm learning lessons every day. I am a constant student of new methods and the latest studies and, you know, whatever's out there that kind of help me get smarter and help me stay relevant. I mean, there's two things that I think that the, you know, the trainer now really needs to get good at doing. And that is, one, staying relevant by learning, doing. If you're going to talk about it and write about it, you better be doing it also. Right.
Yes.
That's one of my number one rules. And then the other one too, is just be keen on understanding media, because we're not fitness guys that just do fitness. We're actually a media company that sells fitness, right? You know, whether it's a social media platform that you have, or it's a website, or it's an email list, or whatever you have, you know, with newsletters going out, whatever that form of media is, could be YouTube channel, you know, whatever that form of media is, we have to really stay on top of the technology and the changes that occur, because, you know, this is my 200th podcast, but, you know, over 2 years ago, I didn't have a podcast because I didn't know how to do it. I just happened to find Zoom, and I'm like, huh, this is easy. But before Zoom, there was nothing that made it easy. You know, so technology can make it a lot easier for you if you just keep your eyes open and your ears open and, you know, see what changes are occurring on the horizon.
And, you know, what's good to see is that there's more legitimate professionals in tactical performance who are starting to realize how to leverage these outlets, because, you know, what I'll say is it amazes me, like, the lack of followership for a lot of people that I highly respect and admire, and I'll jump on their Instagram. Like, how do they only have 2,000 followers, but this Yahoo over here, who's given this BS, you know, training protocols that are totally illegitimate and they don't truly have any coaching experience in the space, has 200,000 followers, which means they're going to have more influence. And so the scales are starting to catch up a little bit. You know, folks like Vernon Griffith is a great example, and you know, he's figuring out how to leverage social media, and deliver, you know, legitimate coaching information to the masses. But I think more of us need to do a better job of that still. And, I kind of look forward to seeing, you know, I look forward to my feed being populated by what I think is great information, but it's also packaged well and delivered well, because that stuff matters. Media matters.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just a way... it's just a way to expand your business, you know, and, you know, yes, it's great to have a, you know, a schedule full of personal training clients, but there may be a day when you can't work and you can't see personal training clients, and but you still need to somehow produce, you know, content and products that you can also sell, and it just, you know, has multiple revenue streams, is I think very healthy for the you know, anybody in the fitness profession or any business actually, but you know, fitness profession specifically.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, the pandemic has, as much as it's hurt, it's also helped in that way, because a lot of folks had to figure out how to reinvent themselves a little bit, create more verticals, be a lot more effective in the virtual space. And so, you know, hopefully that'll continue. I think there's no doubt that it will, even once the, I don't know if you could say a pandemic ends, but basically when the pandemic ends, let's hope that, you know, some of those lessons learned continue on. I'll say too, I think what's happened is, so myself's probably a good example, because like I said earlier, I hid behind closed doors at First Group and I just enjoyed being a coach on the floor. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly I'm in a position where like, that's not good enough and I need to be more public facing. Well, you're starting to see a lot of other coaches make similar moves, maybe going from a coaching position into even like a sales position with an app company, or maybe they create their own side business that is also training either aspiring tactical professionals or those that are currently in the space. And you're just starting to see a lot more public side of a business that's been considerably private in the past. And I think as that continues to happen, we're going to get more and more instances where great information is delivered to the masses as the norm. And there doesn't have to be, you know, mutual exclusivity between great information and appeal.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, another thing too, for an aspiring transition from military to training, trainer, is to find a niche that you enjoy. You know, fitness is a huge business. Right. You can be a general fitness practitioner and go to a gym and help out multiple types of people, almost kind of like the family practitioner in medicine. You know, he just kind of does a little bit of everything. That's fine. You know, you can do group classes, you can do personal training, you can help athletes, you can help seniors, you know, whatever you feel like doing. But, you know, there's so many other niches within fitness. You know, if you like more triathlon training, or bodybuilding even, or powerlifting, you know, but then there's the tactical space, and even the tactical space has multiple, you know, sub groupings in it too, from military, law enforcement, firefighters, special ops, you know, everybody specializing in something in that area. But then you can even take tactical fitness. And this is what I do. I take tactical fitness and I separate it into four phases. So you have first phase, which is a recruit trying to get into the position of being a military person, let's say. You know, so there's your training will probably look like a fitness test. You got to pass this fitness test in order to get into the training, right? And phase two is you now need to specialize, specifically train for what your next step is. Is that a boot camp? Is it an academy? Is it a selection program? You know, depending on the levels, might take a little more time to, you know, produce the kind of results you want. And then phase three, where most of the money is the active duty operator and human performance. And, but that takes a whole new look too. It doesn't look very similar to phase one and phase two. Now you're looking at maintaining all the elements of fitness, but you're also adding in stress mitigation and resiliency programming, you know, so each one of those have these subspecialties to it as well. And you're also probably going to be older longer than you are younger in these jobs. So your fitness has to train, your nutrition has to train. You're probably no longer a hard gainer. You're probably an easy gainer now. So you gotta watch how you eat. And then something I don't really talk a lot about, but it's something that deserves its own little genre, is phase four tactical fitness, which is the post operator and the, you know, retiree who has now had a lifetime of maybe athletics before the military, a military career, and all the bumps and bruises that brings. and then, you know, the type of fitness programming and health and wellness programming that they need on, you know, the next 20 or 30 years, that, you know, of their life. So that's a big world.
Yeah, it's a huge world, and it's in a continuum that's almost infinite. And I actually was listening to a podcast of yours where you had mentioned that, and you had said about being older in the job almost longer than you're young. And I think it's absolutely true, especially because due to the physicality and even the mental strain of the job, I think it makes a lot of folks, you know, older sooner. And it's funny when the POTF first kicked off, for example, so Human Performance and Special Operations first kicked off, everyone thought like performance, right? And just like, let's bring speed, strength, power, agility, et cetera. And we just kept like, those were the buzzwords. Mm-hmm. And over time, the word that I hear more and more often and appropriately enough is longevity.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think you're really seeing a transition toward coaches and the whole human performance team supporting the idea of longevity from a physical perspective. I think we're still a far cry from doing it at a level of effectiveness on the mental emotional front. And so, you know, that's something I would like to see is, hey, it's not just about like, let's show you how to, you know, increase your mobility and, you know, maintain strength and power over time and so that you can age well from a physical perspective, but let's start giving folks the tools so that they can start to be, you know, effectively engaged in some of the mental and emotional trauma that they're experiencing over years and some of the stress mitigation that they're experiencing over years, because that is the longevity component that I think is most needed.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you gave me an idea here with something I want to share. Let me just share the screen. I made this Venn diagram a few years ago. Let me see if I can find it. Where are you? Share my screen here real quick. All right. Can you see that?
Yes, I can. Do you mind if I take a picture of it?
Oh, no. Sure. I'll send it to you too.
Perfect.
So this little Venn diagram, and it's just like everything you just mentioned, you know, some of the things that we're trying to do on the far end, you know, we look at it as, you know, elements of fitness. You got strength and power, speed and agility that all work well together. That's why I kind of place them in one thing. Like if you think of a football player, you can work all those in one season, right? Yep. One cycle, you can work those really work well together. And then you got some anaerobic, aerobic conditioning and muscle stamina. You know, sometimes getting really good at your muscle, aerobic conditioning and strength and power don't really mix so well. So maybe you need a different cycle of those. But put those two together, one builds durability, one builds work capacity. And of course, on the bottom side of it, you got a very big component of stress mitigation, which covers your sleep, your recovery, your nutrition, your mobility, flexibility, you know, and that kind of hits all the big issues, you know, because stress can become chronic, you know, especially when you're burning the candle at both ends, it can really hit you. And then the stability side is really more job related. You know, you got job skills, you got coordination, hand-eye coordination, you got a certain mindset, and all of those kind of come together for what you said, longevity. And so that's how I've always kind of pictured, you know, the tactical fitness world. And what I'm trying to do with tactical athletes, and that is not an easy thing to do, right? You just can't go do a WOD and hit all those, right? You got to do more. I call it a WOY, workout of the year. It has to fit into a system,
yep.
That allows you to develop all these well enough to once again be good at all of them, and not necessarily have to be great at one to the detriment of others.
Yeah. And for that reason, it's sustainable.
Yeah.
It's sustainable. Yeah. And to your earlier point, that's something that is important for the person who is on the recruit side all the way through to the person who's on the retirement side. So none of those things ever fall out of fashion.
So let's do this. Let's spend the rest of this time talking about FitOps. Yeah. And let's tell me some great stories within FitOps. What are some of the ones that come to mind of like, this is a great transition story and what he's doing or she's doing now?
So I have to be totally honest with you. I'm not the person to provide those stories because A, I'm pretty new still, but B, we haven't ran a camp since I came on board due to the pandemic. And so I haven't seen a journey from start to finish. I would be regurgitating a story that you could probably already see somewhere, online. So I don't want to overstep my bounds and kind of inappropriately talk on that. But that said, what I can say is that I'm interacting with some of the grads. And just as an example, there's one gentleman, I'll keep their names out just in case, but sure. There's one gentleman who has opened his own business, right? And so he has his own training business, and he is extremely, extremely successful and innovative in that space. And it's awesome to see. And in the same breath, he gives back a ton to us by coming back onto camp to be a squad leader, by helping out with even things like graphic design for the organization, stuff like that. So he has some other talents that he can lend to the fight. Nice. There are a couple of other gentlemen who have started a podcast. And that podcast is more on the psychological health side of the house. Also, we have the aftercare program, for example, again, led by Johnny, but a couple of the CVFOs, as we call them, certified veteran fitness operatives, soon to just be FO for brevity's sake, but a couple of them actually started another subgroup of aftercare that is focused specifically on folks with addiction problems.
Oh.
So kind of it's almost like, you know, instead of mom and dad being in the room, so to speak, like they can go and be their own in a total private setting just amongst other FOs. And so they don't have to have the intervention from kind of the heavy FitOps arm side of the house. And another great example is a female coach actually, who is now an instructor with in the Marine Corps. So she's a Marine Corps HIIT coach.
Oh, nice.
So part of that program. And so, you know, I guess the point being that there's a lot of people who have graduated the program who have gone a couple of different directions. And almost all of those directions involve some way that they're also giving back. So they're reinvesting in the cause that invested in them. And I think that just kind of speaks to just how special what's being developed at FitOps is. And what I'll say is, quite frankly, in the past, we didn't have that strong aftercare program. We didn't have that launching point and that next step and that way to really foster and maintain the community over time, where now we're building an infrastructure to support that and putting the money and the personnel in place to support that. And so I think where right now, you know, maybe a third of our graduates are still kind of connected in a quantifiable way. You know, in the future, I think what we're going to see is more like 3/4 or more of our graduates still maintaining connection to FitOps, because we're going to continue to support them on their journey.
That's nice. And you could basically be like just a continuing education provider, you know, to your folks, as well as, you know, having them come in and teach some of these things. I think that's phenomenal. I think, you know, when you compare it to your standard, you know, fitness association that is really, you know, there for certification, maybe some liability insurance, it's completely different, you know, completely different program what you have set up there.
It's funny you mentioned certification, because, you know, a certification is part of the program, and actual, it's not a FitOps certification. It is right now we use NETA, National Exercise Trainer Association certification. So an NCCA accredited cert, but the real focus for me with regard to education for FitOps is qualification. And that's what we hope to kind of differentiate what we had to offer from a lot of those other things, you know, and you know, NSCA, obviously, an organization near and dear to my heart, but they're great on the cert side of the house. They're also great at just like content. They have so much stuff, but what they're not great at is the journey. And part of that is because they serve folks who are professional coaches who live and breathe in that space already. But it's a lot different when somebody doesn't necessarily know where to go or where coaching is not their primary gig. And so, for example, something we struggle with the tactical program is somebody might become TSAC-F certified. So they're tactical strength conditioning facilitator. And maybe they're a firefighter. And maybe them coaching within their firehouse is a tertiary role. So it only holds so much weight compared to their other responsibilities. Well, they go to the NSCA website to try to navigate how to get CEUs and maintain their certification and figure out like, hey, I did your practitioner course and I got this TSAC-F, what now? And we didn't really have that laid out for them already, where we really need to have it streamlined and simple because they just don't have the time to mess around with the intricacies and the complexity of our educational offerings. And so hopefully that's something that Mandy Nice, who took over for my role as well as another gentleman, hopefully those two like take the reins on that and continue to build out that effort. Because what we don't want is for people to suddenly like let their certification lapse or lose their passion for coaching because we didn't put the right education in front of them. Because we have it, it's somewhere in that giant NSCA locker, I guarantee it. I mean, sure. How many articles have you reviewed that would probably be very appropriate for a young coach in the field who also happens to be a tactical professional? But if you don't let them know where to find it, it's going to be very hard for them to do that on their own.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, reading journals isn't a whole lot of fun. You know, you have to really like, you know, some of the science and study that goes into a journal. You know, it's tactical, you know, the NSCA journal, there's a tactical journal there that's very popular in this community, but it's not necessarily fun reading. It is like you're sitting in a science class, right? And if you can play it in a way for, you know, someone to maybe not feel like they're in a science class, that's a very valuable skill to teach the latest in the science and the studies that are occurring to someone who may not feel like being in a science class that day. That is, if you can do that with your CEUs, that's gold.
1000%. You know, that makes me think of like an Eric Cressy, right? So he's always delivering information that's super current. It's very well founded in evidence-based. And of course that doesn't mean just research, but he does it in a way that's so accessible. And it's like, how do you take these complex concepts and simplify them in a way where I can walk in on Monday and use them? And to your point, that takes, I think, a very special person to be able to speak both languages like that.
Yep, absolutely. But it's one of those things that I try to look for in just information, right? And see what's out there. But you're right, Eric Cressy's performance, he does great, and Vernon's, and you know, so many others that are out there that it just makes it readily available for everybody. I think that's what's the greatest thing about the tactical community is that it's there. Need to read it or watch it.
Yes, there's never a lack of information, you know, and I got to be careful. That could get us going. And I listened to your podcast on assessments and tests and kind of where those are going. And I had a heated, in a good way, I guess, an emotionally charged conversation around all of that yesterday with Ryan Carroll of Bridge Athletic. And it was great conversation. And in listening to your podcast, boy, it's a good thing I wasn't on this one, because I think you and I think we'd be in a lot of agreement across the board, but I think we would just get going about
it. You can go down a rabbit hole on why this is a good option compared to the current option, and you know, what is this really measuring? You know, is this going to make me a better soldier or special operator, or is it just basically a health and wellness test that I'm capable of doing my job that has nothing to do with these exercises?
Yeah,
you know, there's so many different avenues that you can take when you're looking at testing. And yeah, they may be validated test exercises, but what does that mean towards the actual job that the tactical athlete is doing?
Yep. Yeah. And I think the test gets too much attention and too much credit. You know, for example, if you throw any kind of test in front of a special operations community, guess what? They're going to figure out how to get it done and they're going to pass it. In fact, they're going to excel at it, even if you didn't give them any information on how to go about it. And it's just because there's an appreciation for physicality in those cultures. And there is an appreciation for standards and there's accountability.
And competition.
And competition.
You're going to see somebody max it, right?
Absolutely. In fact, you see it all the time. Folks right now maxing the ACFT in special ops. And it's just because, well, yeah, you just put that in front of me, I'm going to crush it. And so when the rest of the military, you know, is struggling with the test, I think, you know, what they're struggling with is culture, and a test isn't going to fix that. And I think that they need to start to work to get at the root of that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. This goes beyond tactical fitness. You know, tactical fitness isn't necessarily the problem here.
Yep.
You know, it's just the tool to make you better at, you know, hitting those physical elements that will make you do your job better, be a little stronger, a little faster, to be able to save your own life or save a buddy's life. You know, that is what tactical fitness is.
And to tie it back into FitOps, you know, culturally too, I think that that's a big focus of the program. And I know it certainly is for Matt Hesse, is the idea of, instead of entitling veterans, right, giving them the free stuff and giving them the better parking spot and whatever else might be available to our community, instead, let's empower them. And, you know, I think that's, you see that in a lot of different programs that are out there. I'm thankful for any program that's willing to help veterans, however they're willing to do it. But certainly the teach a man to fish programs. And in our case, I would almost say that we're teaching a man how to teach a man how to fish. And I think that is just absurdly valuable, because that's something that they can always use in any setting. While we do it by way of personal training or by way of coaching, and try to empower them as coaches, we also realize that not everybody's going to walk out the FitOps door and go into a calling as a coach. So the hope is that there's some of the other kind of soft skills that we've provided that are very transferable to any setting in any field that these CVFOs might find themselves in the future.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And just anything that helps with the transition. You know, you are now seeing a method that works in fitness, but there's nothing to say that that method won't work in, you know, a different, completely different, you know, business, you know, from marketing to real estate to, you know, whatever you feel like you want to go down, you know, that road, you know, understanding that there is a method and that there is a future tied to that method is something that is very valuable to teach. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, when we're in the military, you know, the future is short, right? You don't necessarily see a long road in front of you all the time. You know, sometimes you're just looking at, I just want to get back from this deployment.
Yes.
Right. And your future is that, you know, so yeah. It's a retraining of the mind, and seeing the future is very valuable. So I'm very excited to see how FitOps grows in the future, because it is relatively new. I've only seen it for probably maybe 2-3 years. Maybe is that how long it is?
Yes, yeah, that's correct. And what you're going to see is what I would say is, you know, in a year, its former self will almost be unrecognizable, with exception of the cause and the passion and the people. Like, all of that is still going to be there, but we are really investing in a major upgrade of our educational offerings, of not just saying we're holistic, but truly delivering a process that is holistic in nature. And then, like I've spoke to a bunch, is just the idea of a continuum. So we're reaching back further into the application or the candidate pool process. We're doing a better job with all the phases that get somebody to camp. The on-camp is being extended, and certainly just a lot more focus on the qualified aspect and a little less focus on the certified aspect. And then the post-camp educational assets, absolutely, whether they live within the organization or through partnerships that we create with others who are better equipped, to provide certain components of education, or more importantly, the social network support, the community, the emotional mental health support, things like that. And so I think, like I said, I think FitOps has incredible beginnings, but I think the future is honestly just going to be absurd.
So what can people do that, let's say they're just listening and not in the military, but want to help out? What are ways that, people can help out FitOps.org?
Definitely. So one thing anybody can do is donate. And so to the website you just mentioned, FitOps.org, they can go there. There's very easy donate button.
Because it is a nonprofit organization, right?
It is. Yes, it is a foundation. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and beyond that, I'll actually give my email, npalin@fitops.org. Anybody can reach out to me. What I'd say is this, is even if you don't, if you're not a veteran, even if you don't work in the coaching space, there are so many components to the program that we are always looking for different types of people to lend their expertise. And so some folks write blogs for us. Some help advise me on some curriculum development. And that's not always just X's and O's of coaching. Some can help with some of the infrastructure from the website side of the house, graphic design. There's just a million different ways for people to contribute or be involved. And what I don't want is for anybody to hear it and go, that's not me. I don't really have anything to bring to the fight. Shoot me an email and let's see what you have. And maybe there is something that you didn't even know about that you could lend to the fight. And so we're obviously always willing and very, very grateful for anybody to contribute their energy and effort and expertise to us.
All right. How about, you're active duty military on your way out. What's that process look like?
Yeah. So that's part of what we'd like to do in the future is reach back to start to identify potential candidates before they even leave service. But I think the best way to do that is through a lot of the coaches that currently operate in that space. A lot of them probably think, hey, this team leader of whatever team it is would actually be a great coach. And he seems to be interested. Maybe FitOps would be a great first step for him. And they can start to kind of recommend people in our direction. But that said, right now, unfortunately, our application process is closed until we reopen camps because we have several camps worth who are already literally just waiting for us to open the floodgates. But as soon as we do here in the coming months, they'll be able to again go to fitops.org, and I'm sure we'll broadcast it to the masses as well. And they'll go through a fairly extensive application process to kind of start to earn the right to come to camp.
Well, this has been a great time. Thanks for sharing your story, but also the importance of what FitOps.org is doing. I would love to have an open invitation for you, but also for anybody in your organization, new trainers, that want to also promote FitOps.org in a tactical fitness report or whatever type of podcast you'd like to do. We're happy to have you on again and hear more about it, because I'm very excited to see how this program works.
Awesome. I greatly appreciate that. And I got to say, Stu, that I've been kind of waiting until we get things a little bit better set and we know what opportunities we can create for people. But folks like yourself are exactly who we need involved in one way or another. And so I hope that we can find a way, to get you on camp in the future and if nothing else, just to have another professional coaching, presence for a couple of days to show candidates exactly what's out there and what the possibilities are with them successfully transitioning into these future careers. And then before I forget to say, I would highly recommend that you reach out, if you haven't already, to Johnny Martin, our director of aftercare. Although he's not a veteran, that is a space he operates in. And I think he does it in a way and at a level that's very, very hard to match. And he's also a super charismatic dude. And I think he'd make it for a killer podcast guest. So if there's ever a space or opportunity in the future, I'd consider it. If nothing else, I'd love to set up a meeting with you two guys just to chat talk shop. I think if you showed him some of that graphic that you showed me, he'd love it, and you guys could rap about it for a while.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Any way I can help out. Like I said, I saw this, you know, your press release with the John Cena donation. I was like, I got to write an article about this. So I wrote about it on military.com, and, you know, happy to continue supporting in any way I can. So yeah, absolutely. Just ask.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right. So once again, everybody check out fitops.org. And Nate, thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you.